Angry machines. Machines that eat grubs. Machines that eat us. Machines that eat us. I thought of the way the maggot had said that, as if all it amounted to was a mildly irritating aspect of reality, something that had to be endured, but which could not really be blamed upon anyone. I remembered my revulsion at the thought of the maggot's defeatist mode of thinking. No, not my revulsion, I told myself, Sky Houseman's. I was right, wasn't I? Ratko led the three of us through the crudely excavated tunnels of the Dream Fuel Factory. Now and then we passed through widened chambers, dimly lit, where workers in glossy grey coats leaned over benches, so densely covered with chemical equipment that they resembled miniature glass cities. There were enormous retorts filled with liters of dark, twinkling, blood-red dream fuel. At the very end of the production line, neat racks of filled vials waited ready for distribution. Many of the workers had goggles like those worn by Ratko, specialized lenses clicking and whirring into place for each task in the production process. "Where are you taking us?" I said.
"You wanted a drink, didn't you?"
Quinnenbach whispered. "He's taking us to see the man, I think. The man runs all this, so don't underestimate him, even if he does have quite an unusual belief system."
"Gideon?" Zebra asked.
"Well, that's part of it," Ratko said, obviously misunderstanding her. We passed through another series of production labs, and then were led into a rough-walled office where a wizened old man lay, or sat, it wasn't immediately clear, before an enormous battered metal desk. The man was in a kind of wheelchair, a brutish black armored contraption which was simmering gently, steam whispering out of leaking valves. Feed lines reached from the chair back into the wall. Presumably it could be decoupled from them when he needed to move around, gliding on the skeletal curved spoke wheels from which his chair was suspended. The man's body was hard to make out under its layers of aluminized blanketing. Two exquisitely bony arms emerged, the left placed across his thigh, the right toying with the army of black control levers and buttons set into one arm of the chair.
"Hello," Zebra said. "You must be the man."
He looked at each of us in turn. The man's face was skin draped over bone, worn almost parchment thin in places, so that he had a strangely translucent quality to him. But there was still an aura of handsomeness to him, and his eyes, when they finally looked in my direction, were like two piercing chips of interstellar ice. His jaw was strong, set almost contemptuously. His lips quivered as if he were on the verge of replying. Instead, his right hand moved across the array of controls, depressing levers and pushing buttons with a dexterity that surprised me. His fingers, though they were thin, looked as strong and dangerous as the talons of a vulture. He lifted his hand from the levers. Something started happening inside the chair, a rapid, noisy clatter of mechanical switches. When the clatter stopped, the chair began to speak, synthesizing his words with a series of chime-like whistles which, if you concentrated, could be understood.
"Self-evidently, what can I do for you?"
I stared at him in wonder. I had been assuming that Gideon would be many things, but I had never imagined anything like this. "You can fix us the drinks Ratko promised," I said. The man nodded. The movement was economical, to say the least, and Ratko went to a cupboard set into a rocky niche in one corner of the office. He came back with two glasses of water.